I guess we'll begin, even if we don't have all of the speakers here. First thing, we do have a quorum, so Representative Holberg moves the minutes of the last meeting. All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed? Passes. Next item, I still don't see Judge Bransford, so Judge Tilson, do you want to move up into the starting gates?
Thank you.
This is a presentation on our juvenile justice system, which is really something that we're going to be looking into this year. There's a lot of concern over what is or isn't happening in the system right now. So, Judge Tilson, my understanding is you're from Ramsey County and the juvenile court there?
I am. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Judge Judith Tilson. I work in Ramsey County in special courts, which is juvenile delinquency and child protection, and at the moment it's also family, but I'm not assigned to that. And I was asked to come and talk a little bit about juvenile delinquency procedure. I love questions and I love interruptions, so feel free. You have in your packets a blue piece of paper that is a flow chart about juvenile justice. And it's this is a very truncated version, a very simplistic version, and it's a good place to start. It starts on this document where the juvenile is apprehended. Many things happen between that and the appearance in juvenile court, and it is the focus of juvenile justice, at least in Ramsey County and Hennepin in the current period, and actually nationwide. Different diversion programs, different community-based programs trying to include community assistance in the process before it ever gets to court. So that's a whole nother discussion, which I'm not prepared to talk about in great detail, but I want to just note that that is a huge area of juvenile justice. Juvenile Detention Alternative Initiative, which I'm sure some of you have heard about, focuses on that part of the flowchart. Once you get into juvenile court, there are many decisions to be made. Whether or not this child should be certified to adult court, should be designated an extended jurisdiction juvenile, or treated as a juvenile. Those decisions are very much case-based on the age of the child and the nature of the crime. I'm not sure what you representatives are most interested in hearing about. The extended jurisdiction juvenile and certification juveniles are always interesting. I want to not forget the 10-year-olds and 11-year-olds. We don't certify them, but we have a lot of them in court. We have 10-year-olds coming into court with huge problems. Violence at school, violence towards teachers, damage to property. I have a 10-year-old who's completely out of control in the community. It was just in last week. We don't want to just lock him up in detention. We certainly aren't going to talk about treating him as an adult.
Judge, yes, my understanding was that, and maybe it's Judge Bransford, one of the judges was going to talk about the whole CHIPS area.
I'm happy to talk about CHIPS as well.
Unless you want to go through the other part and then see if Judge Bransford comes, was she going to talk about that? Or?
My focus was more on delinquency. CHIPS, that's what I was told. I'm happy to talk about CHIPS, actually.
Oh, I guess it's Judge Bransford going to do the CHIPS. So,
I don't know if Judge Bransford will make it. She has two judges in her district out sick. She's covering three calendars this morning. She'll be here when she's done, if she gets done in a timely manner. I also have a very large CHIPS calendar starting at 1:30, and I have to leave at 10 after, so I apologize for that, Mr. Chairman. But that's what we do. I'm actually covering another judge's calendar this afternoon myself as well. Child protection, child in need of protection or services, process-wise is very difficult. I don't have a simple flow chart to give you on that because there's so many tracks. A child comes into child protection through emergency protective care, voluntary placement, followed by a CHIPS petition or a termination petition. These are separate things. It all, of course, goes through the county attorney's office. But the CHIPS process itself doesn't have a simple flowchart like this. generally, a child comes in to the CHIPS, actually, CHIPS deals with families, and I'm using the word child, Mr. Chairman. A family comes in because a child is, there's a crisis, and an emergency protective care is not unusual, but it's even more common to have a voluntary placement because the parent is unable or unwilling to care for the child. And then a child protection petition is filed. The courts are monitoring these very closely. We have hearings every 3 months and can have even more while we provide services to the family to see if we can address the issues. The first goal is always reunification, but often there's a dual track where we provide services for reunification and look for permanency. I can tell you just this morning, it's not uncommon, but I had another case this morning where the parents voluntarily signed a consent to adopt because they knew that they couldn't care for this child and a relative could. And they're very moving hearings. I had both parents in tears, and the rest of staff was also choked up because they were giving up custody of their child because they cared about the best interest, which seems to contradict whether or not the child is really, they were not bad people or not even bad parents. They had drug issues and others.
Judge, I have a question. What can you do with a child that is under 10 and is committing crimes and the parents don't know what to do? So it's not the issue that the parents need some straightening out. What can you send them to any kind of camp or anything?
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's the first thing I talked about is the space between the juvenile is apprehended and the appearance. These are the community resources that we're talking about. In Ramsey County, there's a program called ACE, All Children Excel, that is specific for children under 10 committing delinquencies. They have a whole system where they decide whether or not this child is at risk to reoffend, and it's all database and evidentiary-based system. Hennepin County has a similar program. Delinquents Under 10 is the name of their program, and other counties do as well. Obviously, a child under 10 cannot be charged with a delinquency, but we do provide programs. They are child protection cases in that sense. If the child is seriously out of control at home, we can place that child, but that would be through a child protection petition or a CHIPS petition. But again, more and more focus is on community-based programming for these children that involve the whole family and extended family and trying to find out what the issue is and how to address it and prevent the child from continuing to spiral out of control. Because that 9-year-old out of control will be a 12-year-old in our system, and that's what we're trying to prevent by these community-based programs. We need more. I mean, I say that we have some, and we do, and they're good programs, and we don't serve all the kids that we need to.
Okay, go ahead.
I was going to talk a little bit about extended jurisdiction juvenile and certification because I think people may be less familiar with those. I believe it was 1996 or 7 when the court started using extended jurisdiction juvenile designations. Historically, it used to be that a child was either a juvenile and we lose jurisdiction at age 19, or we certify them to adult court and we're talking about sending them to prison or to adult programming. Now we have this middle ground, which is juvenile jurisdiction until they're 21 with an adult prison sentence stayed. Now, if a child is over 16 and charged with a felony of a certain type, it all has to do with the sentencing guidelines, often there's a certification motion made. A EJJ is almost automatic if the county attorney wants to do it for certain presumptive commit cases. That doesn't mean they always certify those. And again, I want to talk about specific cases to bring the fact that these are real people to life. The case I just had last week, I'm doing all in the last week because they come and go so fast, we have many, many cases, was the case that was in the paper of the young man who tried to carjack woman's car and took her purse. She was pregnant, and they ended up beating her on the ground in the Midway area of St. Paul. Many of you may have seen it in the paper. The county attorney determined that this young man, who was not yet 17, I believe, really didn't belong in prison, but he really should be certified. They agreed to a double upward departure, so there's a huge prison sentence hanging over his head, but he's going to a juvenile inpatient locked facility until he's 21. And in that case, we will actually have jurisdiction over him longer than if he was certified, because he's not yet 17. We'll have him till he's 21. If we just sent him to prison, he'd go to prison, he'd be out, he'd be on parole for a short period of time and be done before his 21st birthday. So it's a middle ground so we can actually do some treatment.
So could you explain, I didn't follow, you said that you could give him a longer time as an adult certification, you can give him up till he's 21, is that? I thought you could give him beyond that.
Jurisdiction juvenile, we have jurisdiction until they're 21. So until their 21st birthday, they're on probation, they're on supervision, we're providing services.
But what would you, otherwise, if you had certified him as an adult?
In that case, Mr. Chairman, if he'd been certified as an adult, he would have gone to prison, the presumptive prison sentence, been out and been on parole for a short period of time and actually been done before.
Oh, he'd have a shorter sentence that way. Oh, okay.
In that particular case, that's not always the case. So is there any particular part of either child protection or juvenile delinquency that you're most interested in hearing more details about? Let me say a little bit more about delinquencies. I really love interruptions, but I don't want, if there's not a question, I'll say a little bit more about delinquencies. The quantity you have in your handout some numbers about the numbers of filings statewide. The quantity of delinquencies and the challenges for the judges are that in one particular morning we may have anywhere between 10 and 20 or 25 young people come before us with serious delinquencies. And what's different about delinquency court, juvenile court, than adult court is that in adult court, we often, people just run through and we figure out what their sentence is and they're gone and we may or may not see them again, but our goal isn't necessary, it's just to give them the sentence. In delinquency court, we're actually trying to make a difference. And the challenge for the current judges statewide is that we want to talk to these kids. We want to say to the juvenile, why don't you go to school? You have to go to school. You are 14 years old. You need to follow the rules at home. You need to go to school. And one of the things we like to say to them is you don't have to like school. You just have to go and cooperate and learn something. And then try to engage them in a conversation about why they're doing any of the things they might be doing. Now, I'm not talking about the serious, violent delinquents when I talk about that, but criminal damage to property or simply the truants, which is technically a child protection case, but if it's the truant combined with a damage to property or an auto theft, we want to have a conversation with these young people and restore them to public safety.
Representative Felsman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm aware that the state of Washington is doing something different. It started in King County where when a child comes in because they're juvenile delinquents, they're not going to class, they're truant. The state of Washington has started sending in social workers into the home rather than probation officers, and they're actually reducing the number of juveniles that are ending up incarcerated in the long run. Is anything like that going on in your county or any of the counties that you know of?
Judge Tilson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, that's the Juvenile Detention Alternative Initiative I was talking about. It is happening in Washington. It's happening in Cook County. It's actually happening in both Ramsey and Hennepin here now. It's newer here. They've had great success in the state of Washington. They came and talked to various court personnel, I believe it was December, and it relies on community-based programming. It means that there has to be an alternative to detention. There has to be something before on this flow chart, before it gets to court. There has to be a variety of services so that we can reduce the number of juveniles in detention. Having social workers or community-based program providers going out to the home is a very important part of that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Westrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to follow up with the committee and let them know that I actually went to a conference where I heard about this, and the state of Washington took their juvenile incarcerated population from 300 on any given night to under 75 by doing this. The challenge Minnesota has in comparison is we don't fund social workers at the state level. They fund everything statewide, so our state would have great savings at the state level but the added expense at the county level. So.
Mr. Chairman,
if I may,
Representative, they have also had very similar numbers, even more extraordinary, in Cook County, where their average juvenile detention stay, I believe, was about 800 and is below 100 average, using the same juvenile detention alternative initiative ideas, and those are the ideas we're trying to bring into Minnesota.
Great, thank you.
Judge Tesson, I know there's also something like that. The difference between Maryland and Virginia, which are right next to each other, and the way they treat them and the numbers are really astronomically different. We want to welcome Judge Bransford, who is now here. Representative Holberg, I believe you had a question.
Yeah, my question is just general. If a genie were to jump out of a bottle today and grant you one wish to help solve or address the challenges of juveniles and crime, and what one thing do you think we as policymakers could do that would make? I know there's no magic bullet, but is there something day after day you say, gee, if this could only change, it'd be a lot better?
Either of them, Judge.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for, or apologize for my delay. We had a couple of sick judges and a really heavy calendar to cover for everyone, so I got over here as soon as I could. That's an interesting question. Of course, the easy way would just be the same, you know, more resources. But the bottom line is that I think it would really be helpful if we had, for instance, things, better programming for kids on the front end so they wouldn't have to get more involved into the system, such as the after school hours and more effective mental health services we need for children. We see a lot of young people that come into the system that have mental health issues and aren't being addressed. And if those were being addressed in a more comprehensive manner, we may not have them get as far entrenched into getting more into more serious delinquency.
Thank you.
Any follow-up? No? Okay. Okay. I don't know how you want to balance it out now. Judge Bransford hasn't heard your testimony, which makes it...
Can we have one moment, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
Well, we had some conversation before. My understanding is that you've all received the juvenile justice flow chart. I could answer any questions, but I was also going to talk more specifically about the adult certification and the EJJ prosecution if you were interested in that, which is the more serious cases.
That's fine. Judge Tilson just started to get into that.
Okay. Well, if you look at the flow chart, we have if the juvenile is apprehended and if they appear in juvenile court. What happens is if it's a very serious offense and the youngster is 14 or older, then the county attorney can have the option of filing a motion to have us as judges determine whether the child should get certified to adult court, which means get transferred the case over to adult court. Or in the alternative, depending upon the age and the type of the offense, we could make a determination that the child should get extended jurisdiction juvenile, which we refer to for short as EJJ. And that is a creature that the legislature that you put together back in the I believe it was 94 approximately, as a dual jurisdiction. We find it being very effective because what that means is instead of juvenile court jurisdiction, our power over the young person ending at age 19, which it usually does because if they committed an offense right before their 18th birthday, they need to be on probation at least until they're 19. We extend the probation until age 21, and they have an adult prison sentence hanging over their head or suspended. And those are, we have found in Hennepin County, and I think it's true throughout the state, that those are the types of offenses that are person offenses. Those are the types of offenses that would be presumptive go to commit to the Commissioner of Corrections or to prison if they were adults. We found them most frequently to be cases such as aggravated robberies, of course, if someone's severely injured or killed, criminal sexual conduct in the first degree, the serious drug cases in the first degree, those are the types of cases that if they were adults, that the presumption would be with no criminal history that they would go to prison. Those are the types of cases that we see coming in. And then we have to have certain factors and make determination on and looking at public safety as far as what should happen to the young person. So there's certain factors that are set forth in our rules and in the statutes. The two primary factors are the seriousness of the offense and the person's prior delinquency history. We have to give those factors greater weight than others. I've been the presiding judge in Hennepin County in juvenile court for the last year, and in that capacity I've talked to different people from the media, and I've been really surprised that some people have the perception that nothing much happens when the young people come into juvenile court. And I just want to set that clear that that's not true. If we have a young person and they've committed a serious offense, we have to make the determination as judges, first of all, whether they should be certified to adult court or extended jurisdiction juvenile. The reason that we have to make that presumption assuming that they committed the offense. And the reason that we have to make that presumption up front is because if we decide that they're either EJJ or adult court, then they get a jury trial because they would have adult prison time hanging over their head. So if they go to adult court and then have the jury trial and they're found guilty, then they come back to juvenile court and we can fashion a juvenile disposition that would be very structured in addition to the adult prison time hanging over their head. The juvenile disposition frequently includes an out-of-home placement at a residential treatment center or a correctional facility for a number of months, up to a year or 18 months, and then stringent probationary supervision following until their 21st birthday.
Just to clarify, that was on the EJJs?
That's correct, on the EJJ. If they're certified to adult court, then they're just treated as an adult, and they have a hearing, and they have a complaint filed, and they just get a jury trial, and they're treated as an adult from that point.
Okay. Did you want, was there any, I don't know who had planned to do what, and I know it's hard for you coming in late. One question I had was, what can we do? We're seeing, obviously, you've heard of the Trey Crips and some of those, Emerson Murder Boys, I forget some of the different ones. They're the ones that happen to be in my district, and there's people under 10 in those, I know. What can we do with them? Is there nothing to...
We haven't seen that many real gang members in the under 10 category. However, there have been statistics that have indicated that if you have young people under the age of 10 that are committing things that would be delinquent acts if they were 10 or older, that is definitely a red flag. And what happens for those children is that they can still come into court as children in need of protection or services. So under the CHIPS, or Children in Need of Protection or Services, there's a variety of different ways that we can get court involvement. The most traditional that you think of are children that are physically abused or neglected because of the parents, perhaps chemical dependency, mental illness, or other things. But there's other ways in which we can get the services that are needed to that family. One of them is if you have a young person who's under the age of 10 and they've committed offenses such as assaults or any other kinds of illegal acts, we can get social workers into place, into those families, and to offer services to find out what's going on for why the young person is involved. As you're aware, we just recently have a new Hennepin County attorney that's been elected, and I had a conversation with him, and he informed me that he wanted to put renewed emphasis on the delinquents under 10, as they're called, because that is a good preventative mechanism. There's certain criteria that we know. For instance, a lot of those young people under the age of 10 have an older sibling or a parent that's already been involved in the criminal justice system. They might have had their self-protection involvement. So there's some kind of red flags that could bring our attention to them. If we could get services into those children before they get very entrenched into the gang behavior that you're talking, we think that that would also be efficient.
In fact, Judge Branford, I talked to the person, the officer who actually started the cops in the schools liaison program many decades ago. And after he retired, he went through the records and just an informal survey, and he found over an 80% correlation between the children who were problems in second grade and those that were problems in 10th grade. So what you're saying and what about the follow-through, Representative Hillstrom?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure if you have talked to other judges who now do it as who do adults, but recently the records have been opened, and you can in some counties, and you can see the past history of a juvenile that is now an adult offender. And I was speaking to one of the judges who informed me that she was seeing a pattern of children who had problems, maybe were CHIPS cases and maybe were in the foster care system. So are you collecting any data, or do you have any data yet about how many of these serious adult offenders really were issues all along from juveniles on?
Judge, which one? I don't know which one. Judge Tilson.
Thank you. Representative, I mentioned the Ramsey County's version of Delinquents Under 10 is the ACE program, All Children Excel, and it is database. The answer is data collection is in process. It's so much better than it was several years ago, and it's not where we need it to be. I think data collection is really, really important. But ACE, the All Children Excel program, bases who they give services to, and it's intensive services. It's mentoring and social workers in the house on a daily basis and parenting classes for the parents. It's very intensive. They can't do that with every child in St. Paul or Ramsey County, obviously. So they use all the data that's been collected. What are the signs that this particular child is at risk for becoming a delinquent and then an adult offender? And we do know that there's a path that some people have taken historically, and how do we interrupt that? So the answer is there is some data. It's pretty good data that is relied upon now, and I think the move towards data collection is excellent. We need more of it, and I think we're on the right path with that. So it's a very good question. Is there data? And there is. It's not completely fleshed out. As we move to different technology programs, I think it will get better.
Judge Branford, I have a question. And because I've actually had quite a few parents on the north side ask me, not just from my district, but also from south of 26th, and they complain about, and maybe the probation officers are also here, and maybe it's for them, but between all of you, what they've said is that they have problems with their children, and they don't know what to do. A lot of times, as the kids that are growing up as problems have parents who have contributed in some way to that, but there's also, I've got a lot of friends who have had problems with their kids becoming in gangs and different things, and they have said that they tried to get the county interested in doing something, and that's nothing was done with their kids. They didn't really receive much of anything as far as force guidance, let's call it. Judge Bransford, this is, since you're Hennepin County, you get stuck with the question.
Okay. I understand and I've seen the frustration that parents have had when they come in and they say, my child is truant, or my child is disobeying my rules. And they come to us and they say, you fix them, you do something. And what has happened is that within the probation department, because of limited resources and because of our requirement to look at public safety, a lot of the resources have been developed, geared towards those who are very serious offenders to make sure that they're not reoffending or they're not committing any new offenses. With regard to the early ones that are starting to get in trouble, one of the things that we're doing is working with various community agencies to kind of contract with those community agencies to provide positive outcomes and things for the young people to do. For instance, if we have young people that are committing status offenses such as curfews or truancies or petty offenses such as stealing CDs from a store or things like that, what we're doing is we're referring them back to various community agencies because we found that those are more effective than the court can be or than the probation office can be with regards to monitoring them. And also we want to make sure that we don't mix these kids that are just being a little bit disobedient and the beginning of delinquencies with the kids that are heavily entrenched into the gang behavior. And the reason we don't want to mix them is obvious, because we don't want them to become more entrenched and we don't want the gang members to be able to recruit. And we also I also want to make sure that it's not a dating service being provided so that the young girls don't want to get involved with the delinquent boys. But in any event, so that's some things that we've been working on with some different community-based agencies. So we're really trying to work to develop the community resources so that young people, for instance, could be involved in some positive after-school kind of activities, things that they like to do, spoken word and song and performing and things like that, that they could really get involved in basketball and scrapbooking. And there's a variety of kind of things that when some of the programs have the young people themselves decide what kind of activities they want to do, they're successful and they go forward with it. So that's what we've been kind of doing. We've been differentiating, and there's been some national data that is supported that we don't, that if the court gets involved too heavy-handed on kids that have committed low-level offenses, that it's worse outcomes for those kids. So that's one reason that we're trying to defer those into the community.
Just a quick question. Do we have any kind of lockup for under 10s?
Do we have lockup for under 10s? No, the statutes in the... No.
That was a quick question. Quick question, quick answer.
Because the delinquency statutes indicate that in order to commit a delinquent act that could be charged as a delinquency, you have to be 10 and older.
I didn't know if there was a way around that. I know in about half the states go our way and half of them you can do it to under 10s, but Judge Tilson.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I want to respond to that real briefly. One of the things we're doing with some of our more serious under 10 situations where it seems like this child is really out of control, is usually mental health issues. We do have therapeutic foster homes and regular foster homes where the people are specifically trained. There is a difference between a foster home and a therapeutic foster home, and can do some services that way, because we do need to protect the community and we need to find out what's underlying it. If it's a 7 or 8 year old, and we do have them who are seriously out of control, we often will talk about a therapeutic foster home with some people who are going to be with this child all the time. They don't have to go to work. Their job is to be a therapeutic foster home where the parents are often not going to be home all the time. Maybe the child can't make it in school. And having said that, I really have a huge calendar this afternoon, and I do have to get back, so I'm going to turn over to Judge Brown.
And I was just going to say that we have to go to Lieutenant Schaefer now. And Judge Tilson, thanks for coming. Judge Bransford, if you have time, there might be some questions arise. We have to have the presentation by Lieutenant Schaefer in order to get everything in. But
I would agree with Judge Tilson's answer that when you said a lockup, I thought you meant like a jail. And so we don't put children in detention jails, but we do try to make sure that there's some accountability within the family structure and the way that Judge Tilson indicated this. The way that is used throughout the state.
Okay.
Thank you.
Is Lieutenant Schaefer here yet? Oh, there he is. Lieutenant Brian Schaefer, he's Representative Coles. Did
Mr.
you
Chairman, before Judge Bransford leaves, and thank you for staying, I'm wondering, and I'm sure you don't have precise facts, but anecdotally even, can you talk from your experience, I mean, how many of the kids that are coming through the juvenile system are coming from broken homes? They don't have two parents at home. I would think that that's fairly common, but I guess I'm curious from your experience how common that is, how often you're seeing kids in your courtroom who do have an intact nuclear family, if you will, or two adults providing some care and attention.
Judge Bransford.
Thank you. I don't know that we keep the stats based upon that, but based upon what I've seen, there are a number of young children that come into court that do not have a mother and a father in the home or an intact family system. On the other hand, there are a number of young people that come to court that do. I seem to see it more frequently when they come in on children using alcohol or drugs or young people doing maybe more low-level offenses. What I've seen more frequently is that if there are people in higher socioeconomic backgrounds, they're frequently able to access other services to assist their child without needing the county or the state-based services. So that if their child is chemically dependent, they could have already used their own health insurance to get the child into a chemical dependency treatment program or other things like that. So if there's, they might have, or and if the issue is mental illness, they can get their child in for some treatment, whereas those in lower socioeconomic backgrounds or without the necessary insurance are more hard-pressed to get the services to their child to prevent the child from getting deeper into the system. So I would see there being a correlation that way as well. But I don't know if I'd venture a guess as to a percentage, but I'd just say there's a large number of young people that come into court that do not have strong family support.
No follow-up? Okay. Lieutenant Schaefer? Judge, if you have the time, if probably you could stay around as long as there might be some questions
I could say another couple.
That people have from his presentation or from the probation presentation, either one, and there might be four-way conversation. Lieutenant Schaefer is the new head of the newly constituted juvenile unit, which the Minneapolis chief, the new chief, Tim Dolan, has said has accounted for quite an effect on the juvenile crime right away. So, Lieutenant Schaefer, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for inviting me today. I guess we can address several issues. I don't know if you want me to talk specifically about the recentralization of the juvenile unit and what the effects have been, or if you want, I've got some information regarding the some of the arrest trends over the last 5 years that we've seen in Minneapolis to kind of maybe set the stage as to what we're seeing by way of patterns, age crimes, those types of things. So
I think that most people would be more interested in the patterns, what seems to be causing it, what seems to have an effect on it. Just the reorganization within the department doesn't matter a lot to the members,
okay.
But as far as what you need, whether it be laws, services, things like that, that you can tie into what you've seen as having effect, I think that would be the best.
Okay. A lot of this will overlap with some of the statements made by the judges. Since we are all trying to work together on addressing juvenile issues, for the most part, we have seen a tremendous increase in juvenile arrests and juvenile crime since about 2004. Right now, juveniles account for about 17.5% of all crimes committed, or all arrests, if you will, in the city of Minneapolis. Most of these offenders are most of the time are young males, most of the time African American males, that account for, as I said, about almost 70% of that 17% of the crimes that juveniles are arrested for. We have seen I think some of the hugest increases in crime have been, or in arrests, were pretty much in the area of curfew violations, warrant arrests, runaways, and assaults. You hear a lot about robbery and the increase in robbery, which was one of the reasons, one of the key reasons why the juvenile unit was re-centralized. I think the increase in crime that was noted in the city of Minneapolis that seemed to be pretty consistent with major cities throughout the United States, the rise in juvenile crime pretty much accounted for the increases that we're seeing. So we had a change in direction with a new police chief and the re-centralization of the juvenile unit to address these. In the 6 months or 7 months that we've been in existence, we've had, I think, overall about a 37% increase in charging. At one point, we were about 91% increase in petitions filed on juveniles that have committed robbery, which was significant. We've seen things starting to level off. But with the number of kids that we're dealing with, just to give you an idea, in the last 6 months, I pulled some numbers. In roughly about 5,000 cases routed to my office since May, those 5,000 cases, or I guess maybe closer to 4,000, account for or show that there were about 11,000 juveniles involved in those 4,000 cases. So that is another thing that poses a big problem for us, is these offenses are committed most of the time by more than one juvenile. On average, probably about three. We see several cases where there's 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 juveniles that in some cases where it would beat down a victim, a robbery victim, on a purse snatch or something along those lines. So
just a question, is that unusual and something that is unusual? I mean, it's different from adults, or, and is this younger juveniles that do that, or is it 17, 18?
I would say, first of all, and I think the judge can agree with me, that this is something that we, that is different than what we see in adult situations. This is very much a juvenile type of behavior, with the multiple juveniles committing a single act. The second piece, I believe, to answer your question, the age groups, we've seen a fairly large increase in the number of the age, and that is the 17-year-olds appear to be the majority of the kids that are committing these offenses. By group as a whole, the kids that we are arresting are the 17-year-olds. I believe since about 2001, there's been a slight decrease in the number of kids that we've arrested between the ages of 16 and 10, but still the 15 through 17-year-olds account for about 70% of all of our juvenile arrests. So with that, we have seen, we are seeing, I think, system-wide an increase in, obviously, in violent crime involving juveniles, and that is a huge concern. I would go back into, I guess, echo what the judges have said, is that we do need to focus services on alternatives to detention. We are participating in Hennepin County with the JDAI, as you heard, the Juvenile Detention Alternatives Initiative. Our belief is we need to get the right kids detained. The effort is not to keep kids out of jail. The effort is to make sure that the right kids are incarcerated, and that's what we're moving forward with. We're trying to institute programs, diversion programs, working with Hennepin County, Minneapolis Public Health to address these. In my recent meetings in the last couple
of weeks. Just a minute, Representative Felsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I spoke to my police chief recently as well, and he's finding that when they go and round up children in the middle of the night for curfew violations or whatever, that in many instances they call the parents, and the parents refuse to come and pick them up. And due to the fact that Hennepin County's has had so many, that there really wasn't a place to take these juveniles because the more serious juveniles were already being held. Are you seeing that, and then what do you do with the children?
Lieutenant Schaefer.
There are a few things. One, I would agree that we do not have places for to take juveniles, low-level offenders. And when I say low-level offenders, we're talking about kids who are not status offenders. We're not talking about curfew truants or runaways. We're talking about the kids that don't commit a crime that's severe enough to justify them going into detention, but do deserve some type of alternative. And that needs to be immediate. That is one thing that we're finding, that if we can, when we bring a juvenile in, if we can get them hooked up with services immediately or assigned to basically somebody to hold their hand and say, for instance, you will go to school tomorrow. We're here to make sure you're going to go to school. Those are the kinds of initiatives we need. But, yes, we do not have adequate facilities to hold juveniles. We don't agree with the fact that you should be putting kids with a runaway warrant or low-level warrant in the same jail cell or in the same building or facility with kids who have committed homicides or aggravated assaults. That is where the difference lies when it comes to facilities. As far as parents responding, I think looking at our curfew truancy numbers, that a majority of our kids are returned home, and that is, of course, our goal, but we want to make sure that there's follow-up by appropriate services, family-based follow-up.
Judge Bransford?
Yes, I'd just like to add to that response that within Hennepin County for the last several years, we have had what we refer to as a curfew truancy center. So there was a physical place where if young people were picked up for curfew, they could be brought. And the police have been doing that, sometimes with different, if they're too busy doing something else, they might not do that. But they've been, they have been doing that, and that's something that's going to continue. And so we thought that was a good model. And one that had been, that we're looking at after we've seen what they've done in Washington and other places, kind of a low-level or a supervision center or some other place where they could be processed so the police officer doesn't necessarily have to stay with them for the amount of time it might take to reach the parents, but still that they don't have to be locked up and placed there, you know, as he said, with the more serious violent offenders.
Lieutenant Schaefer.
Thank you. And I don't know what our time limit is here, but I guess when you asked about some specific things, and I think one thing that really jumps out is the increase in crime that we've seen throughout in transportation. Kids are becoming more and more mobile. They're moving from within the city out to the suburbs. They're using our public transportation services. That is something that we need to, I think we need to focus on and try and discourage. I think I had mentioned maybe in some of our communications that we do, one of the biggest things that I guess as a group as a whole that we do need to focus on is getting kids and keeping kids in school. I've heard that over and over and over, and there is a direct correlation with curfew truancy and these kids obviously that are not attending school. If you're out violating curfew, you're not getting up in the morning and you're not going to school. And so then we're out picking these kids up for truancy. That is where we have to spend our dollars and encourage or work with our schools to try and get kids in school.
Lieutenant Schaefer, I've got a question since you brought that up. I remember getting a law passed that would allow the police to do that, and it was actually the new chief, Tim Dolan, that had talked to me about that law, and with the help of Commissioner Segrin when she was in the legislature, we got it passed against the wishes when he was in the legislature of the New Hennepin sheriff. But that program was working well, and then it got discontinued and under the former police chief. I'm wondering, is there any services back in that, or is it just short of money, or are the police still doing that?
I guess I'm not familiar with that particular service, but I know that the police chief, along with each precinct commander, are working with the schools in their particular precinct, and they are aggressively going out now. Instead of just driving around looking for truants, we're working directly with the schools to identify who the truants are via a list, and then we're going out and seeking those kids and trying to take them back to school. And I think that's kind of what's going on right now at a precinct level. So I don't know if that mirrors what you're talking about.
Lieutenant Schaefer, it's somewhat in that case. They were taking them to, it was set up as a pilot with Patrick Henry, and was when Ron Simmons was the vice principal there, and they had set up a system where they'd pick them up, bring them to Henry, and they'd, the liaison and another person would connect them, and they had to go to a church where they had to do work in the community during the day and then stay and do homework at night. And but the police were involved in actually going out and finding them and things like that. So, but that's okay. One other question I had is, you mention, I think, or somebody from the new juvenile unit mentioned that there were problems with youth who were leaving home and other adults were sheltering them and then either intentionally getting them into crime or they were getting into crime? Is that some kind of a...
Yeah, one of our concerns that we were seeing a lot, we have right around 3,000 to 4,000 runaways a year in the city of Minneapolis, and quite often, particularly in some of the young females that run, it's very, very common for them to have either made contact with an adult male through, as we know with technology, with MySpace and these different kinds of web-based networks. They are running to households where other adults are allowing them to stay, not forcing them to stay, but allowing them to stay. And we have, and I have talked to the new Hennepin County attorney about this as well. It just appears that it's a very difficult crime to prove or to charge because you have to get cooperation from the victim, and most of the time they're running there for a reason, so they're not going to, bite the hand that feeds them, so to speak. So that has been an issue, I think, that we may have discussed at an earlier point in time about trying to find a way to better address that, perhaps moving forward with something that we could do something without their cooperation, particularly when a parent is saying, my daughter or son is at this location and they won't come home, and we go get them, bring them home, and they go back again. And we really don't have a lot of recourse.
Could the statute language in contributing to the delinquency of a minor be revised a little to pick that up possibly?
I think that would be something that would be good to look at, yes.
Okay. Representative Holbert.
Thank you. You spoke earlier about the demographics of About 70% are black males. What's the trend for females? And you hear some of the talk show hosts talk about increased bullying out of females in the schools. What are you seeing out on the streets?
We are hearing a lot more about concern about the increase in females involved in crime. In Minneapolis, I think females accounted for 31% of our arrests. I don't have the numbers to compare it, but it is increasing. We are seeing more females involved in violent crimes, and particularly, I think you probably saw it on the news the other night about assaults, aggravated assaults, and those kinds of activities seem to be more violent acts. Where I think in the past we saw more theft, more property crimes, but now I think we're seeing more person crimes involving females.
And if I might,
Representative Holper.
Sure. Are these girls traveling in groups of girls, or are they getting together with the guys and the gangs, or how are they? You talked about how most of these juvenile crimes involve 3, 4, 5, 6 individuals.
I think most of them that have come across my desk, I would say, are it's groups of females as well.
Judge Bransford, did you want to comment?
I would just agree. If you think about your own children or nieces or nephews, or I think young people tend to operate in groups in general, whether it's positive or negative, and so we just happen to see the negative, but it seems that they frequently, we see that within the juvenile court, of course, we have more than just the city of Minneapolis, but so I would just agree with what Lieutenant Schaefer said, but also indicate that it's gone beyond Minneapolis, it's within the suburbs, and we do see groups of girls involved in assaultive behavior as groups.
Lieutenant Schaefer.
I really don't have a whole lot to add unless there are questions. I sure can try and field if there are some.
Are there questions right now? Why don't we bring up HINAP and probation? Maybe you can sit right near there. We could move one more chair over for HINAP and probation. I think, is anybody sitting in that chair? Could one of the pages move one more? Cheryl? There. Dennis is all service here. Thank you. We now have Simeon Wagner and Gerald Moore, and they will be handing out it's almost a booklet here. on HINAP and probation services and for juveniles, and boy, I don't even know who's who.
I'm not going to tell you. I'm Simeon Wagner.
Okay.
And this is Gerald Moore. We're both supervisors with HINAP County Juvenile Probation, which in effect means that we supervise groups of POs and probation officers that provide the supervision to the youth. Mr. Moore, especially for your interest, Mr. Mallory.
He's got North Minneapolis.
Oh!
His card wasn't attached, but I'll
give me his phone number because we've got to get him working harder.
That's South Minneapolis. Everything south of Washington. There is a suburban region also, a probation unit, and the way that we divided that up is we looked at the numbers of kids that are on probation in Henderson County. You have about a third of those kids living in South Minneapolis, a third of those kids living in North Minneapolis, and a third of those kids living in the rest of the suburbs. That's changing a little bit as the suburbs become a little more urbanized, especially in the north area of town, so that you have serious kids in there. Got some questions?
Well, could you explain the probation, the system that you have for juveniles? And maybe what problems there are, if there's any, other than just dollars for more probation officers, are there specific programs? Are there specific laws that you would like changed? What problems are you encountering? from...
I've been doing this almost 30 years now. So, you know, I have a few thoughts in that regard. And I guess, and you guys have, everybody's touched on it when they've been up here this afternoon. And you guys have too. When you start to ask about parents and involvement and holding kids accountable, what I've seen, at least in the last 15 years, is a great breakdown in the parental system. I'd say that, I didn't hear the exact number of how many single parents or parentless kids that we have, but it's a good share of the kids that are on probation. And I think I get cussed out on about a weekly basis by parents whose kid I will not take out of the house. There's great frustration in the parents in being able to hold their kids accountable. But there's a certain amount of sophistication in the kids, because there are a number who, when their parents try to hold them accountable, they call child protection on the parents. So there becomes this kind of flow that goes on around there, where the parents, some parents just don't feel they can hold their kids accountable. Let me do a general probation thing. We work for the court. The court, after going through the legal process, makes an order and says, this is what I want you to do, kid, or this is what I need you to do. We then do the legwork and the process to get those orders initiated and working. The other problem we have is that when the individual or the human being, the delinquent, doesn't do what the court has asked him to do, despite many attempts to do that, then we are in a position where we have to bring them back to court and ask for some other sanction. The problem is that with your low-level kids, there are no other sanctions. And the amount of noncompliance on certain sets of juveniles is pretty broad. I like to think that 60% of the kids that come into the system, there's about 4,000 on probation today in Houston County, 60% of those kids come and go and do what's necessary to get away from us. Another 20%, with a little incentive and a lot of accountability, will also do what they need to do and get away with it. 20% aggregate. They go around and around, and he knows the names, and I know the names, and they are the kids that make up, you know, our toughest probation kids. And fortunately or unfortunately, I've been here long enough to watch some of those kids grow from 15 to 35 or 40 and to see that they sometimes continue their lifestyles in an adult process.
I have a question. Why, since cops and POs on the north side tell me they know the 10 to 20 that cause almost all the crime, why can't we do something about them?
You've got to catch them when they're doing it. And then you have to prove the case in court, and then you have to get adjudication, or, you know, be found guilty. There's a great process involved in this. Back in the 60s, I guess, within recall, we brought public defenders into the juvenile court to protect the rights of youth. I think one of the things that wasn't envisioned in that time, is that when you introduce the legal process into the juvenile court, you also brought all of its underpinnings and its concepts. You have public defenders who do their doggone just to protect the youth from the system landing on them. I mean, as a public defender, I'm going to do everything I can to minimize your intrusion or your impact or your being able to find me. You have processes that take long periods of time to get over. Hearings, next appearances, next hearings. You have a bench which has how many judges?
We have 8 judges and 2 referees in housing.
And unfortunately, not all of them think exactly alike. And so you have the human factor that impinges on all of that. And you also have the youth who have learned that, gee, this legal thing is a game. When I public defender tells me to plead not guilty, and so I'm going to plead not guilty, and I'm not talking to you guys because I'm not guilty. We see this in probation where we have kids that will come back in the system with a new offense. They won't deal with the probation officer because their public defenders told them don't talk about it. We may be going back for a Morrissey hearing to try and violate them, so they're not going to give us the information. So what you have is a large morass of uncooperative people and processes. Not all of them. I mean, certainly when they start working together and doing things of that sort. But for the kid himself who's being exposed to the system, which is way beyond most of their understanding as to what's going on, the only thing they see is, I got to beat the system.
So what you're politely saying is that public defenders are, I see one of the representatives in the back, I hear that from even youth that have been in the system, that they're growing up and they don't really know much, and they're basically, what you said, taught that it's a game by the their defender, and they get into kind of, rather than cooperation with a system of trying to bring them out of it, there are problems. But Representative Hillstrom and then Representative Paymer have questions.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So now that you've been in doing this for a long time, do you see a pattern between kids who, this 20% that are kind of working the system that end up becoming adult offenders, and did they tend to come from being a victim? Maybe there were CHIPS cases, termination of parental rights, maybe they were in the foster care system, so they ended up in the system and really not able to get out.
Mr. Wagner?
To answer your question, yes. But to put it on a broader perspective, we're looking at the third or fourth generation of breakdown in skills and socialization, starting in the 60s. With the hippies or whatever you wanted to call them at that particular time. But you had people who, weren't entrenched in the society. They weren't being rewarded by it. You had your smaller ghettos in Chicago and Detroit and Gary and San Francisco. And you had young people having children with no ability to pass on skill. You've had three or four generations of young people continuing to have babies, with each generation having less and less skills to pass on to those people. I see that every day. So I call it, it's been a breakdown in the socialization process, and corrections can't fix it. We're a reactive agency. You talk about things up front to try and help people become more socialized, to have more resources, have schools that are able to educate the people that they have. I have one school in Minneapolis that I had somebody do a survey the other day. We have seven kids on probation, and their whole offense base has been in this school. They've never done anything outside the school. They've assaulted to level four. You probably know which one I'm talking about. But well, I have one kid that has seven assaults out of that school, and he's on probation, but he's still going to that school. So where's the insanity of me trying to help him or my probation officers trying to work with him in that school when he doesn't feel safe in there? So there's a lot of factors that don't show up in the rhetoric or when we talk on this level that happen on a daily basis. I assign files. I have about 1,200 kids that are under the auspices of the probation officers that I assign. I know quite a few of those files. And the circumstances of these kids are something that I would never want to grow up in.
Judge Ransford?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, thank you. I'd like to respond. We are in the process throughout the state, the court system is, of converting to MNSIS, so converting to our information system. That information system has been very helpful, we found, in Hennepin County, because we've been in juvenile court, we've been on MNSIS for a little over a year. And it's been helpful to be able to document the correlation between those who are delinquent and those who started out as children in need of protection or services, or even those who, as Simeon said, have no parents. So their state boards, their parental rights have been terminated. They haven't been adopted. They, or worse yet, they've tried to be adopted and had a failed adoption. So some of these young people have been rejected numerous times at an early age, and they don't trust anyone, nor do they have any basis or reason to trust anyone, because those that they should have trusted weren't there for them. The other part of the system that we deal with within the court, of course, is the child protection system, and we are making great strides towards either putting the proper services in so that we can teach the parents how to parent, or correct the issues that led to the children being abused or neglected. Or if it doesn't work in a short period of time, we're terminating parental rights and getting them to homes where hopefully they can be adopted and loving, nurturing homes. So that's something that we're trying to do on the front end to alleviate that problem. But I would agree that there is a correlation between children, and I think we'll be able to document that even more. Judge Tilson had referred to that earlier, and I believe that Ramsey County is not quite on Mensis yet, but it's a conversion problem going, a conversion going over all 87 counties and all of our court systems. But in Hennepin County, we've been able to note that direct correlation.
Thank you. Representative Paymer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wagner, I was just curious about your caseload for juvenile probation. Has it been stable, increased, decreased, and do you feel that your probation officers have sufficient time to supervise these young people?
Well, I think the caseloads have stayed fairly stable, except for EJJ. Over the last 4 or 5 years, EJJ numbers have increased because, you know, they stay on a longer period of time. Actually, just Mr. Moore is the specialist in that area. I think that in certain areas, the suburbs especially, we have a lot more low-level offenders, and the probation officers may be working with larger caseloads in that regard. In the urban areas, the north side is taking it on the chin. The south side is not doing too badly. We have average caseloads of about 28 to 31 in most cases, and that's manageable. We also have some specialty caseloads, gang caseloads, do a couple of cooperative things with the police with JCAT, arresting and detaining the more serious juveniles and trying to focus on.
Thank you.
Our EJJ caseloads have averaged about 40. We're more reactive than proactive, putting out fires, bringing kids back to court. We have been allocated 2 more probation officers. I don't know if that's going to make a difference, because we want to do the proactive work. We want to make sure that kids are going to school, they have jobs, they have the resources that they need. So funding probation officers is definitely an issue, so that we can get out and collaborate with the police and go out and track these kids.
Thank you for following. Mr. Wagner, I thought one statement you said was something I certainly agree with. The north side is taking it on the chin. We are really getting hit with the crime up there, and we need some services from people that are... I remember there was an informal survey a couple of years ago on 26th Avenue North, and I believe it was... It showed that the drugs dealing there was really a farmer's market for drugs instead of, you know, over... By Honeywell, the old Munsingware building, they have farmers market for vegetables. On 26th Avenue North, it was a farmers market for drugs. Over half of the people selling were from outside of the area, and over 75% of the people buying were from outside of the area. But first, Representative Johnson, and then Hellstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is this for Judge Bransford or Mr. Wagner? I was out at Boys Totem Town this last Friday, which is the counterpart to the home school in Hennepin County for adjudicated youth in Ramsey County. And what they wanted to talk to me about was their grave concern about the state educational standards as it relates to kids in their facility being able to pass state standards in math and reading. Of their 80 kids there, they didn't think hardly any of them would pass. Don't see much likelihood of that occurring, and they saw it essentially as kind of like a train running into a brick wall that's just going to further their kind of getting lost and bad self-esteem or whatever, and not being able to get a job and just staying stuck in that kind of underclass situation. So do you have any comments on that or thoughts about that as it relates to getting a high school degree for some of these kids that are in a rather tough situation?
Mr. Wagner?
I supervise the truancy, not now, I supervise the truancy program on and off for the last 20 years. The most frustrating things to me was that you could not convince kids to see the importance of going to school. My belief that if a youth doesn't get an education and or is moved towards a vocational area where they may be able to use their natural skills to find a way to make a living is that they're going to be in the lower stratum of our society, and of course they're going to be at risk to do something that's inappropriate as they look at the things in our society that are offered, but they're not able to get. I think education is one of the most important things that we can do. How we get that done is another question.
Just to piggyback off what Sammy has said, even when you get a kid convinced to go to school, the next year the funding might be cut. The teacher that they were used to or that touched them might be cut. So if the funding's not there, the school cuts the system that they're used to, the next year becomes even more increasingly impossible for us to get the kids to school. There's no consistency in the school. The principal changes every year, therefore the program changes every year. So kids aren't seeing a consistent school system, so therefore it's even increasingly harder to get them to school.
Do you have a follow-up? Otherwise, Representative Hellstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I represent a first-ring suburb on the north side of Minneapolis. I represent Brooklyn Center and Brooklyn Park. And so whatever happens in Representative Mullery's district directly impacts my district. So as things are clamped down in Minneapolis, it tends to spread northward. So what would be your thoughts or suggestions about ways in which we could actually stop these kinds of things from happening rather than just displacing them from Representative Mullery's district to mine?
Mr. Wagner.
No concerns. It relates to available housing. It relates to people being able to move as they so desire. Because the north side still has a lot of people. We call them the Brooklyns. In fact, you know, probation joke about annexing the Brooklyns to the North Minneapolis region. Jill doesn't laugh when I say that. Actually, we are putting a probation office in your area, up by Earl Brown, which we hope with the presence of about 17 probation officers in the community, the suburban region is going to house out there, that we'll be able to partner somewhat with the agencies in your area to try and slow some of that down. We feel your pain. The North Side's always had a tendency to be the hard work, blue-collar working class back in the 30s when they built it. And then, you know, North Brooklyn Center and Brooklyn Park came up with that same population, and their kids moved out. Well, unfortunately, now we've got a rough population in there, and they're just following the road.
Can I answer?
Judge Brands.
Thank you. I just wanted to point out that we can't blame all the problem of the kids on the parents. Some parents are working really hard. Some parents are two-parent households, and they're both working really hard. Some of them are one-parent households, and they have to work more than one job. So they don't have, and they need to do that just to survive. So they don't really have the time or the ability to properly supervise their kids, especially as they get into, you know, teenage years. So I believe that one of the things, and the mayor of Minneapolis and myself had the pleasure of going out to our Hennepin County Homeschool and seeing their play that the young men put on. And one of the messages from the young men that were out there as far as what would have stopped them from being involved in this type of thing is, I know it sounds silly, but just having things to do. There's very little positive, structured, out-of-school activity for the young people. That's assuming that they're in school. So I agree with what Gerald said, that we already know that they have to have relationships with somebody other than their parents that they can relate to and that cares about them. So whether that be a mentor or whether it be through the school program, that there's stability in the school programming, but also in the after-school programming, that's really important as well. So out of school hours, there's a program that I recently heard about, a mosaic program that's run in the suburbs out in your area, kind of, but it's run by the young people as well as adults, so there's more young people, and they just have all this kind of, they use in a school, and they just have after-school programming and stuff available that also allows them to get their homework and tutoring and just hang out, but it's for the older teens. There's very few of those kind of things that are available that if they even had the option that they could opt to do something on a positive basis instead of hanging out on 26 and trying to, be around the people and being enticed into selling the drugs.
Well, Judge Bransford, what you were saying about the parents, some of the parents are really trying hard. I had a constituent come here who had just received a full scholarship to Brown University in Rhode Island, and his three older brothers were bogus boys, and they're all up in St. Cloud locked up. And I asked him what the difference was, and he just said they were quite a bit older, and the mom tried to keep them out of things, but they, as soon as they came home from school, they got into other things because that was what, nobody stopped the gangs from being around them, so they picked them up. When he came along, she wouldn't let him out of the house. He had to stay in the house after school, so there are those problems. I'm not sure if there's any other. I think the president of the Minneapolis City Council, I believe, Barb Johnson, yes, she is up there. So that shows you the interest there is to try and deal with this. She came over here for this hearing, and she also is from almost the exact same area as my area, which is the heaviest crime area of Minneapolis, well, the state right now.
Mr. Chair, if I could just add one more comment before I really need to go and get back to court. And that is that, it's to differ with my friend here, Simeon, but I really think that although some kids do come into court and think that it's a joke, juvenile court is no joke. These children need legal representation because some of them are in, and if they are found guilty, and they have a right to those due process rights that's guaranteed under our Constitution, so we have to do that. If they are found guilty, they can be removed from their home, as the representative has been to Totem Town. They can be removed from their home for 6 months, 12 months, a year, and it would be really unconscionable for them to have those kind of things happening to them without them having some kind of representation. So although it gets complicated when they commit an offense with four or five other people, because then they have to try to get separate attorneys representing each one of them because of the conflict, it gives us all challenge to do that, but we're still within our limited resources trying to do the best that we can to dispense justice and make sure that it's fair not only for the young person that's accused, but also for the victims. They have a right to be heard and that they can come in and be notified and that kind of thing. So I just wanted to kind of point that out there.
I understand where you're coming from. I also understand from where he's coming from, because I hear that from the kids themselves that say that they wish somebody had not protected them so much from the court system, but tried to get them some help through the court system that was in that situation. So I think we're out of time, unless there's a short question. Okay, we're adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.